all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. Well, we want to give you some news of some local events that are occurring in the Metro Detroit area that you might be interested in helping out with. September 13th is the first one we're going to talk about. That is the 14th Annual Veterans Summit, sponsored by the Canton Community Foundation's Local Impact Group, in conjunction with Legal Help for Veterans. This is a free, open to the public, September 13th, 11:30 to 1 p.m. at the Canton Township Administration Building on Canton Center Road. We're going to talk about what you need to know about the PACT Act and the new VA caregiver program. You can go to localimpactalliance.org to register, or call Beth Mead at 734-495-1200. It's a great informational outing with the community, so I think you'll like that one. Always want to remind you of also our upcoming now in September, Radio on the River, Veterans Radio, Radio on the River. It's a Saturday, September 30th, 3 to 7 p.m. It's on private property along the beautiful Huron River in Superior Township. There's going to be guest speakers, food, beverages, radio broadcast recordings, silent auction, all to support Veterans Radio, which is a 501c3. Go to the website, veteransradio.org. You'll be able to find how to get tickets, or for that matter, make a donation. If you can't attend but you want to help us out in our 20th year of broadcasting veteran stories, go there, click on a couple of links at veteransradio.org, and you'll be able to donate. We're encouraging folks to at least think about $20 for 20 years, a small price to pay for the services you've been getting. And then one last one we'll mention because it's brand new. group of people are getting together and forming the Air and Space Forces Association, AFA, an Ann Arbor chapter. It's going to be chapter 181. And it's going to promote the dominant U.S. Air and Space Forces as a foundation of a strong national defense. It's going to honor and support airmen, guardians, and their families, and to remember and respect the enduring heritage of Air and Space Forces. You can learn more about them. One of the organizers is Doug Odie Slocum. You can go email him at dslocum@theslocumgroup.com. Their program is going to be their initial program, I should call it, Saturday, October 7th, but reach out for more information. They'd love to have you participate. Probably less than half of the states in this country have a Hall of Honor, or Hall of Fame, you might call it, for military members. Very few have him for both military and veterans from their state to highlight their service and educate the younger generation about what's been done. So we're really happy to be able to talk to board members from the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor about some of their upcoming inductees here in October of 2023. This is, I think, the fifth class. They've put in about 60 people along with all of the Medal of Honor recipients. So you're going to hear a set of diverse stories that I think you'll find enjoyable. It may make you want to go check out what your state's Hall of Honor is doing, and if there isn't one, think about maybe getting one organized. We want to welcome back to Veterans Radio Paul Ryan. Captain Paul Ryan, retired out of the Navy Reserve, is the vice chair of the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, and it's coming that time of year again to put some more inductees into the hall. Paul, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Hello, Jim. Nice to be back with you again.
Well, as we've told folks in the past, this is the Hall of Honor for Michigan is to recognize veterans and military members who have had really extraordinary and distinguished service, either while on active duty, or maybe they got out and really kind of kept the faith in the rest of their civilian world and did extraordinary things for the veterans community. So you put in six military members and six veteran members every year, and we're going to talk about four of these. Paul, when is the induction ceremony this year?
This year's ceremony is a little earlier than we've had it in past years. It will be held on Friday, October 27th at 12:30 p.m. The ceremony itself will begin at 12:30 at the Michigan History Center in Lansing.
Oh, it's a great location, very dignified as it should be. And will you have individuals who are being inducted actually present for this affair?
Yes, we have, as you know, Jim, that we are open to bringing in for induction worthy individuals, living or deceased. And I believe of the 12 this year, about half of them are living and the other half are deceased.
Well, it's a great ceremony for those who are able to attend for the inductees, their family. It's a real honor. And certainly at those who have passed on, their family members or friends and relatives, their community comes out and supports this as well. So you'll have, I don't know, what, 200 or 300 people in the auditorium?
Yeah, the auditorium holds about 250, and we've been pretty good about filling the house for just about every ceremony that we've had since 2019.
Well, let's talk about four of these individuals, and we're going to get a chance to talk to some of the other board members and others who are going in this year in 2023. But one of the ones in the military category, S.E. Woods, really gives you a sort of a sense of how encompassing the hall is to capture people. So tell us about S.E. Woods.
Yeah, S.E. Woods has a really interesting story, and on a couple of levels. One of them, I think the main one, is that S.E.'s story shows just how important so many different aspects of military service are. It goes well beyond the warfighters. S.E. was born in 1915 and was a lifelong resident of Detroit. She, like so many other patriotic men and women, enlisted in the military in World War II. In S.E.'s case, as a female, she enlisted in what was then known as the Women's Army Corps in 1943, and served with a unit identified as the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion. This battalion, which was nicknamed the 6888, actually went into Europe, initially in England, and then into liberated France. And Essie's battalion was responsible for processing mail.
Well, anybody who's ever been in service, at least in the age before the internet, certainly knows how important getting a letter is. And as I understand it, there was quite a backlog at this point, and they sent in the 6AAA and said, nobody else has been able to solve this backlog. Let's see if you guys can. And by you guys, I meant the women. So how did that story play out?
Yeah. And just to reinforce your comment, when I was on active duty in the Navy back in the 70s, you're exactly right. Receiving mail, especially when you were deployed, I was deployed once, was really important. You could tell the positive effect that it had on those who received the mail and negative effect on those who didn't receive any mail. So this was a really vital activity to contribute to the mission. And in the 6AAA's case, they had a 6-month backlog of undelivered mail. Set these, I believe the unit was primarily female, set these women soldiers to the task. They were able to process more than, on average, more than 65,000 pieces of mail per 8-hour shift. And that incredible performance enabled them to clear that 6-month backlog in only half of that time, in only 3 months. Just an incredible performance.
Yeah, we could spend an hour on this topic because, in fact, I have on interviews for Veterans Radio. It's so interesting. This was a African American unit that faced a lot of discrimination, and yet processed through all this mail. And now, again, folks, Veteran Radio listeners, think about this. This is before computers. This wasn't before Excel spreadsheets. All this mail had to be pieced together by hand and on pieces of paper and pencil. So it was quite a feat, and Essie Woods was part of that. But after she got out, I mean, she was a staff sergeant ultimately, as I understand it, but after she got out, she stayed active with veterans, didn't she?
Yeah, you could say that somebody like Essie, in her experience in World War II, could have very easily said, you know, I've done enough, and I'm going to just live the rest of my life in a different way. But Essie didn't do that. She continued to serve the military and veterans in various capacities for over 35 years. She was one of the founders of the National Association of Black Military Women, and was also a founding member of a local chapter, the Wolverine Chapter 67, of the Women's Army Corps Veterans Association. Continued to serve her fellow veterans and her community long after she took off the uniform.
Well, she was certainly one of the ones, you know, when you talk about standing on the shoulders of giants to keep moving forward, she was one of them. I want to move to somebody who you are inducting in the veteran category, whose public service is also very ongoing. Talk to us about Jack Bergman.
Yeah, Jack Bergman, born in Minnesota, but he'd lived in Michigan for the past 27 years. He started out as an officer in the Marine Corps, commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps back in 1969 during the Vietnam War. Didn't serve there, though. He flew helicopters for the Marines in stateside in North Carolina, Japan, and then later in Vietnam. Jack left active duty in 1975 and began flying the UH-1 helicopter, sort of the old Huey helicopter, for the Rhode Island National Guard. Now, the National Guard is an Army outfit. I do know that a number of folks that serve in the Marine Corps move over to the National Guard because it's the promotion opportunities tended to be better in the Guard. While Jack was in the Guard, he served in numerous commands in Germany, North Carolina, and in Louisiana. Jack went back to the Marine Corps. That, in my experience, is a little unusual. I know a number of people that have gone from the Corps to the Guard, but not back to the Corps from the Guard. Jack did that, went back on active duty, rose to the rank of lieutenant general, three-star general, and served as director of reserve affairs for the Marine Corps at Quantico, Virginia. He finished his career as commander of Marine Forces Reserve starting in 2005, and served in that role for 4 years, concluding it in 2009, which is when he retired. So he had a total, when you combine his Marine Corps and National Guard service, of 40 years of military service.
And he's not going into the hall because of his military service. It's certainly added to this, but it's what he's done since that's so amazing, right?
Right.
Tell us about that.
Guys, we have them that come up occasionally in the Hall of Honor, that their curriculum vitae, as you might say, is strong in both the military and the veteran categories, and could be inducted in either one. And in Jack's case, after he took off his uniform, he too, like S.E. Woods, continued to serve his community, state, and the country in many capacities, including various private sector ventures, but also was elected to the United States Congress in 2016 for Michigan's first congressional district, which serves northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula. Jack is, as a veteran who is also a member of Congress, has been very active in helping to ensure that those who did wear the uniform and fought for to preserve our freedoms receive everything that those veterans are entitled to. He was instrumental in passing the fiscal year 2024 National Defense Authorization Act, for example, in the House. And the National Defense Authorization Act, or the NDAA, as those inside the Beltway refer to it, is the main funding law that funds the military for the successive year.
Well, truly an inspiration, and that's what all of these people who are being inducted are, who demonstrate not only a great military service, but hey, a hell of a public service when they get out. And that's another one of your inductees, Jennifer Smith. Tell us about her in the veteran category.
Yeah, Jennifer Smith was an Army vet. She was a lifelong resident of Lansing, born in 1971. She enlisted in the Army in 1990 and served in Operation Desert Storm as a pharmacy specialist with the 101st Airborne Division, specifically the 326th Medical Battalion. That was in the 101st. She was actively served in Saudi Arabia and then later Iraq, and rose to the rank of staff sergeant. She wasn't in the Army very long, left it, but after she took off her uniform, Jennifer was extremely active with both the American Legion and Veterans of Foreign Wars organizations. Really an interesting story with respect to the American Legion. She served as a commander of American Legion Post in Lansing, Post 535, which is an all-female post. She also rose up through the organization, the American Legion organization, being named as the state chaplain for the American Legion Department of Michigan from 2013 to 2015. In the VFW, her rise was even greater than that. She was also a post commander for a VFW post, 701, in Lansing. She was on the Department of Michigan, the state level VFW legislative committee. She was a district commander for the VFW. And for those people who aren't familiar, the basic organizational unit of the VFW, as well as the American Legion, is a post. And then the next level of leadership up is called a district, which is a collection of posts in a geographic area. Jennifer had that role, District 6. She was also state legislative director, state legislative outreach and congressional liaison, and state chaplain. She also testified before the U.S. Congress Veterans Affairs Committee regarding Gulf War illnesses back in 2015. Just makes me tired reading all of that.
No, she has she has an incredible long list of roles and organizations. Unfortunately, she just passed away a little bit ago, didn't she?
Yeah, she passed away in November of 2021, just short of her 50th birthday. I do not know the circumstances surrounding her death, but I'm aware of other Gulf War vets who experienced all kinds of health problems, serious health problems, because of their service in country, in Iraq in particular. And I suspect but don't know that her untimely death may be related to that kind of a situation.
And here's a good example of somebody who's passed away whose service is inspiring, and the family is going to get to be a part of this Hall of Honor, this medal ceremony. And I know from the other four ceremonies I've been at, this is really impactful for the family, isn't it?
Yes. One of the things that I hear in my ongoing interaction with veterans, and particularly veterans' families, and particularly the families of those veterans who had died, whether it was in the service or as a consequence of their service, the biggest fear that those families have is that the memory of their lost loved one is forgotten. And especially in a case like Jennifer Smith, I'd like to think that the Hall of Honor plays at least a small role in helping to preserve her memory, not only for the family, but for the communities that Jennifer served and for the state overall.
Well, one of the things it's always nice to do is recognize someone when they're still alive and can enjoy it with their family. And you're going to get a chance to do that with inducting Evelyn Kennedy into the Hall of Honor this October. Tell us about Ms. Kennedy.
Yes, Evelyn Kennedy, born in 1939 in Tennessee and then moved as a child to Detroit and lived there ever since. Like Essie Woods, Evelyn joined the Women's Army Corps, but Evelyn joined in 1961. She served for a couple of years as a finance specialist at Fort Hood, Texas during Vietnam. After her departure from the active Army, Evelyn, as a staff sergeant, mid-grade enlisted person, mid-level leadership in the enlisted ranks, Evelyn joined the Army Reserve and served in the Army Reserve until 1996. So that was a total of 35 years of military service for Evelyn. Evelyn left the military, in 1985, she joined the local chapter, Wolverine Chapter 67, of the Women's Army Corps Veterans Association. And while she was currently serving, she was and her long experience before that 1985 date, she was able to use her military knowledge and experience to serve Michigan veterans throughout the state. She did rise in the Women's Army Corps Veterans Association at the state level to positions as a chaplain, finance officer, secretary, vice president, and president for over a 20-year span. And she also served in the national level of the Women's Army Corps Veterans Organization as National Community Projects Chair and their National Honor Guard for 25 years. So again, someone who served the community concurrent with and after her military service.
Yeah, part of the write-up that you've prepared, she also volunteered down at the John Dingell VA Medical Center in Detroit. I mean, this is somebody who had a servant's heart and has been noted for her contributions pretty widely.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed.
But here's the thing. So how old is she, and is she going to come?
Evelyn is very much still with us, thank goodness. And at the spry age of 84, Evelyn will be joining us in person to accept her induction into the Hall of Honor.
Yeah, all of these folks, and while there were a couple of couple of Army and one Marine here. Your inductees go across to all service lines. They go across to all geographic territory. They have to have roots in Michigan, but as we hear, some of them were transplants. All genders, all. It's really an inclusive and inspiring bunch, isn't it?
Oh, yes. We look for the best stories, and I'm happy to tell you, Jim, that Michigan veterans provide us with an abundance of interesting and inspiring stories. We love to take them on and to tell those stories.
Well, again, let's remind our listeners, this is a open to the public, free of charge ceremony on October 27th, 2023 in Lansing, Michigan, at the Michigan Historical Museum at 12:30 p.m. Come on out. You'll hear these stories. You'll get to meet some of these folks. Bring the kids, bring the grandkids. There's plenty of things to do, and it is inspiring. You have some musical selections. Who are the dignitaries, and what are you going to have on tap for music?
Well, as far as the music is concerned, we will once again have a brass quintet from the 126th Band of the Michigan Army National Guard. They'll be coming from Grand Rapids. That's where the band is located. I would tell you, Jim, that we have the same exact guys coming this year, soldiers coming this year as came last year. The soldiers themselves were very inspired listening to the stories. And their lead NCO, who was in charge of the group, came up to me afterwards and said, hey Paul, we really want to come back next year. This was really intensely interesting for us. We want more of it, so we're coming back this next year. And so they are. They'll be with us again in October.
Well, it won't disappoint. Anybody who shows up will not walk away disappointed. Captain Paul Ryan, U.S. Navy retired, we're glad you had a little time to talk to us. We're even more glad that you, as vice chair of the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor, can explain how all this fits together. It's not always easy for people to kind of get it, but I think this will. If they want to know more information and they want to see the names of others who have been inducted in the past, I'm going to give them the website. I'm not going to make you do it, Paul, in case you don't have it right in front of you. But it's MIMilitaryVetHallOfHonor.org. So MIMilitaryVetHallOfHonor.org. And you can get a lot more information, a lot more history, and more details on the stories of folks who are being inducted or have been inducted. Paul, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Jim. Pleasure to be with you.
We're going to pick up the story of some of the other inductees after a few words from our sponsors.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255, 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We're continuing our conversation today regarding the 2023 inductees to the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. We have one of its board members with us now, Bill McDubin. Bill, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Jim. I'm glad to be here today.
Well, Bill is a board member of the Hall of Honor. He is a self-described military brat. His dad was in the Navy, and he got to live all over the world as a result of that. But that wasn't enough for Bill. Bill joined up with the Coast Guard and spent 25 years with the Coast Guard, and again, kind of got a chance to see the world. Certainly Alaska, where I spent some time, but Geez, you got time in London, England, as well as Virginia and Washington, D.C. How'd you get the London gig? That sounds pretty good. Military guys always have interesting stories. Some of them are you sort of end up shaking your head at. And that's what we like about talking about the inductees to the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. They've all got interesting stories, and Bill's on here to talk about a couple of them. Why don't we start with Roger Chaffee? Tell us the story.
I would love to. So Roger B. Chaffee, if folks don't recall, he was the Apollo 1 astronauts that were tragically killed back in 1967 when they were undergoing testing of their command module. He was actually a Michigan-born kid. He was brought up early in his early years in Greenville. He's actually born in Grand Rapids, spent about the first 5 or 6 years of his life in Greenville, Michigan. And then their family moved to Grand Rapids, and that's where he basically kind of developed his passion for a variety of different things, especially flying and aerospace, which kind of came about because of what his father's background, who had been a barnstorming pilot back in the 20s and 30s. And that's when he got his first flight. His father took him up on a, I would assume, like a biplane when he was a little kid. And that kind of hooked him for the rest of his life, kind of made it part of his dream to do something like that when he grew up. He had a kind of a typical boyhood for kids that had been born in the mid-30s and then going into World War II. You know, was very influenced by, you know, the whole war effort going on in the country. You know, kind of that good old-fashioned patriotic spirit that developed among that generation of boys and girls as well. And he excelled in school, you know, in high school. He was also very passionate about his Boy Scout experience. He went all the way through Eagle Scout, earned probably twice the number of merit badges he needed to be an Eagle Scout. So he's just one of these all-around great kids. He graduated from Central High School in Grand Rapids in 1953. And then he applied for the Naval Academy and was accepted, but eventually decided to turn that appointment because he really wanted to go to a college that was going to get him into aeronautics. And so he ended up actually going first to the Illinois Institute of Technology. He then transferred to to Purdue University because they just had a fantastic aeronautical engineering program. And at the same time, even though he didn't go to the academy, he did go into the Naval Reserve Officer Training Corps, got a scholarship for that to help pay for a lot of his college. And, you know, his first experience with that was actually an 8-week tour he had on the USS Wisconsin as part of that program, and he got to tour through England, Scotland, and France, and Cuba. So that was in the late, kind of mid to late 50s that was going on in his life. And then from there, he, while he was in college in Purdue, he met his wife, and that was his, her name is Martha. And she was from Indiana, and they eventually, I'm sorry, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And from there, he became a naval officer after he graduated from Purdue, and he was a jet pilot. And so that was the late 50s, early 60s, and he spent several tours on different aircraft carriers, and then he was assigned to a variety of different air bases down in Florida. And during this time, of course, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis go on, and that's where he really excelled in some of his duties as a naval pilot. through countless missions over Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
And this,
doing
this was
photo reconnaissance.
Yeah, Bill.
A variety of other activities. Yeah,
Bill. This was a time when pilots, test pilots, were kind of at the forefront of getting into being astronauts. Is that how he made the transition?
That was, yes. During the early 60s, that's when he did it, submitted his first application for astronaut training. He was still a little young for that program, and it took him a couple years to actually get accepted and tested. He had some medical issues with his eyes that he had to overcome, which almost cost him his opportunity to go into the program, but he was finally accepted into the program in the early 60s. And that was for the, he was in the basically the third group of astronauts since the program had started. So the Gemini and Apollo astronaut training program. And he commenced that, selected in 1963 and started the training and the responsibilities that candidates had to, you know, get their ultimate assignment to, a space flight event.
Well, and you know, again, this was a rigorous training program of the best of the best, and to be chosen for a Apollo 1 crew with guys like Grissom and White, really, this put him at the pinnacle of his career. But it was short lived at that point, wasn't it?
Unfortunately, it was. But yes, he was accepted as one of the crew members for the first Apollo mission, and it was with Grissom and White, and he was actually also the youngest candidate ever selected for one of the missions to actually go on one of the missions. So well, that was another accomplishment that he had.
You can certainly see, Bill, why the board of the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor feel that Roger Chaffee is appropriate to be inducted into the hall, and that induction is actually going to occur for 2023 this October. And, you know, it's just to have stories and men and women like this from all the services inducted really makes the hall special. That induction ceremony is on October 27th. It's a Friday in Lansing, Michigan, at the Michigan History Museum. Starts at 12:30. It's open free to the public. And Roger Chaffee is just one of the, about a dozen people being inducted.
That is absolutely correct.
And I think the important part there is to, again, tell these stories of not only people like Roger Chaffee, who had an incredible military career leading to being an astronaut, but guys like G. Menon Williams, who had, yeah, a limited amount of service, but it was a foundation of who they were, and it's the rest of their life that's really quite impressive. And actually, we have another one of those people being inducted that I put into that category. Isaiah or Ike McKinnon, he's being inducted in the veteran category. He served in the United States Air Force in the early 60s. He did a little time in Minot, North Dakota, the coldest place you can think of in the United States, and then got himself surprisingly transferred to Vietnam, one of the hottest places you could serve at that time. But Ike McKinnon, with that limited service, came out, joined the Detroit Police Department, ultimately rose to be chief of police, actually was deputy mayor of the city of Detroit for a while under one of the administrations, and really always remembered that foundation of discipline and respect and hard work that was laid, you know, when he was in the military, and certainly there was family influences as well. But that's what you get to do with the Hall of Honor, isn't it, Bill? You get to see people during their service and after their service, and they all end up being pretty interesting stories, those who get inducted.
Yeah, and also his story, and, you know, contrasting it with the other Roger Chaffee and Sophie Williams, is they all have dramatically different backgrounds. You know, they all come from these different walks of life, come from different experiences growing up in Michigan or elsewhere, and they all come back and make such a significant difference and contribution for people in Michigan as well as nationally.
Bill, I appreciate your time today to talk a little bit about a couple of the inductees, and thank you for all your work that you're doing on the Michigan Military Veterans Hall of Honor. We're continuing our discussion about the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor now with its chair, Valdi Garcia. Valdi is a retired colonel from the United States Army, served for 30 years. He also served as a state senator here in Michigan. So his interest in the Michigan Hall of Honor is obvious. Valdi, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, good morning, Jim. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. We've had a chance to talk to some of your other board mates here on the Hall of Honor about the process and the upcoming Class of 2023 induction ceremony in October, and we wanted to continue to talk about just some of the other members who are being inducted, a couple of the individuals for their military career, because you can go in either on the military side or the veteran side. So why don't we start with another Army he's currently, I believe, a master sergeant, Jerrion Halberson Gibbs, who has quite a story of service in Iraq, in Operation Iraqi Freedom. Tell us a little bit more about this outstanding inductee.
Thanks, Jim. And it's funny that you find information in the funniest of or oddest of manners. I was doing some research on some other military history, and I knew that we have friends over at the Michigan History Museum. And so I was perusing their site, and they had a new site up that they put up, I guess, in April about an individual whose name I had difficulty even, reading, let alone pronouncing. But I believe it's pronounced Jerrion Halberson Gibbs. And he's from the Ann Arbor area, even though he no longer lives in the state. But at the time, he was a staff sergeant. But the Michigan Military, the Michigan Heroes Museum had some photos, a story of what he accomplished. And I was very intrigued, so I immediately started to doing some more research. It turns out that this individual, Jerrion Halberson Gibbs, was a staff sergeant in September of 2007. He was a Special Forces NCO. He was in the Army Green Berets, and he was working with some Iraqi individuals, his counterparts, and they were looking to capture someone in Al-Qaeda, who was Iraq's Minister of Defense for one of the provinces in Samarra. And long story short, and I could go into some of the details here shortly, but his actions that day, September 10th, 2007, earned him the nation's second highest award, which is the Distinguished Service Cross. It was presented to him more than 10 years later. Not 10 years later. It was given to him in 2009, But what an extraordinary individual. The more I read about him, the more fascinated I am about his story and the individual. And in a video that I've seen recently, he downplays his actions, and he says he just happened to be the guy on point that night. And what an extraordinary story.
Well, that's
about this individual.
Yeah, these men often are extremely humble. Receiving the Distinguished Service Cross is a huge honor for anyone, let alone an enlisted guy in this situation. And it's part of what the Hall of Honor does is preserve history, making sure that other people know these stories about folks who have roots in Michigan, who have served the country either while in military service, like Halberson Gibbs, or while acting as veterans. And all the guys you're going to talk about really were inducted because of what they did during service. Tell us a little bit more of what he earned the DSC for?
So that evening, they took a helicopter in to the site, and they ended up having to land unexpectedly close, within 30 meters of the building where they that they were going to look for this individual. They cleared the first building, but there was three buildings, and as they exited the first building, they came under heavy fire from the third building. And so they returned fire, neutralized, or as the Army is fond of saying, but in terms of reality, those terrorists no longer exist anymore. And they then continued to move on, clearing buildings. They continued to take heavy fire from a machine gun fire. And as they entered another building, his two Army individuals or colleagues who were part of his team, they were wounded immediately. In fact, all three of them were wounded, and some of them were very, very serious wounds, but they continued to fight. In fact, at the time, Staff Sergeant Halbison Gibbs took a gunshot wound to the abdomen, which, you know, exited out his hip. I don't know about you, but if somebody punched me in the stomach, that would stop me in my tracks.
Exactly.
This guy here was shot in the stomach. It exited out his hip, and he continued to fight. He continued to eliminate the enemy, secure the building, and on top of that, rallied his troops, the Iraqis that were with him, and continue the mission. It was just an incredible feat of heroism, courage, and professionalism to do something like that.
Well, I think it's also a highlight that the Hall of Honor is recognizing not only somebody who's still with us, but somebody from the Iraq war and operation. It's not all about crusty old history that is 100 years old, is it?
That is correct. And you know, one of the missions of our Hall of Honor is to remind folks of the legacy that Michigan has when it comes to service to our country and to our state. And right now, the Army and all the services are facing severe recruiting challenges, and there's just not an interest in service as there used to be. And I think stories like this of heroism, gallantry, courage in just dire circumstances, I think can help to motivate and inspire young people to go out and serve their country. Certainly we don't hope that we have to go to war. No one in their right mind really wants to go to war, but if we have to, we want individuals who are highly motivated, highly trained, and have tremendous amount of courage. People like, at the time, Staff Sergeant Halbison Gibbs, who just went on to do some extraordinary things.
Another one of these living legends, if you will, that's being inducted is Major General William Henderson, retired, who spent time both in the Marine Corps, but most of his time with the Michigan Air National Guard. Tell us about Bill Henderson.
So Bill Henderson is actually a Major General retired who served in both the United States Marine Corps and the Air Force. He was the commander of the Michigan Air National Guard. He was the chief pilot and director of flight operations for General Motors Corporation for 28 years of service. So he served in the Air Force and the Marines as well, but then went on to have a distinguished career in the private sector as well. But while he was in Vietnam, he had 125 combat missions. You got to go home after 100 missions. And they said if you survived your first 10, you probably were going to survive many more. But as you know, or any student of aviation or air combat history, especially in Vietnam, a lot of the pilots that went up north were shot down by surface-to-air missiles. So it was not a milk run. It was combat, and they faced danger every time they crossed over the DMZ and went into Vietnam. Well, as a result of his actions, he was inducted into the Kalamazoo, Michigan Aviation Museum in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
And he's also one of these guys who has received some of the highest awards the nation gives, including the Distinguished Flying Cross twice, yes. actually. And he's flown like every cool jet there is, right? He's flown the F-100 Sabre, the A-7 Corsair. You know, he's got a hell of a record flying. And, again, we're lucky to have that Major General Bill Henderson will be in attendance, as I understand it, at the October 27th induction ceremony in Lansing, Michigan, at the Michigan History Museum on that Friday beginning at 12:30. That's open to the public. So Bill Henderson is one of these kind of living legends, isn't he?
Absolutely. I'm just fascinated by the fact that he flew the F-100 Super Sabre. That was, growing up as a kid, that was one of my favorite aircraft. It served in Vietnam. It conducted some of the most dangerous missions that there were. Those folks who served in the Air Force know as the Wild Weasel missions. They went out and looked for surface-to-air missiles and attacked them so that the rest of the bombers and the fighter aircraft would be free from surface-to-air missiles. And sometimes they succeeded and sometimes they didn't, but they were very, very dangerous missions.
Well, he's a good example of why we're passing along this history. He's an Ann Arbor native. He went to Eastern Michigan University, and he's somebody everybody can relate to, and I think will be a great addition to the Hall of Honor. Well, we have another individual going in due to military service, a Ypsilanti boy. Captain Robert Arvin, KIA in Vietnam. But why don't you tell us a little bit about Bob Arvin's story?
Jim. Captain Arvin, Bob Arvin, was one of those individuals that we will not be able to honor in person, but certainly his record of service it speaks for itself. He was a young man. He went to West Point, and he was, by all accounts, an exemplary student and demonstrated exceptional leadership abilities. But he went on to serve in the infantry. Now, guys like that have their choice of branch of service. They can go into accounting. They can go into finance. They can go into armor, you know, ride around in tanks. But this guy chose to give his service with the infantry, the ground pounders, the guys that walk everywhere they go for the most part. And, he wanted to be where, you know, the edge of the battlefield was. And he certainly accomplished that. And he was sent to Vietnam as an advisor, and he won several awards there, a Silver Star, Purple Heart. And, of course, you know, if you got a Purple Heart, you were wounded in action. So this individual was quite extraordinary individual. But unfortunately, he is not going to be able to be with us at the ceremony.
Well, it's a good example, again, of history, of trying to keep the names alive and the history alive of young men who've given their life in the service of the country. Bob Arvin is fondly remembered by his mates from West Point, the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. And some of those individuals will be at the ceremony to remember Arvin and help keep his history of really selfless service alive. As you say, he was awarded the Silver Star, which tells you something right there. So tell us a little bit about the ceremony as we wrap this up. And we're talking to Valdi Garcia, who's the chair of the Michigan Military and Veterans Hall of Honor. Tell us a little bit about the ceremony and what folks can expect.
Sure, Jim. Folks can expect that we will identify and honor 12 individuals from all ranks, enlisted officers, all backgrounds and races, and males and females, those who served in combat, those who didn't, those who wore their, you know, country's uniform for just a few years and then went on to do extraordinary things in the civilian sector. But we will call them up one by one, first the military, then the veterans, and we will read some citations or some bullet points of some of their extraordinary achievements, and then we will present them a medallion from the Hall of Honor, as well as some tributes and letters of appreciation from our U.S. senators, from our state representatives and state senators.
Well, I hope you found those stories interesting. We didn't get to cover all of the inductees. We never have enough time to do this. We'll put up a longer podcast that captures just about everybody. But come on out on, mark your calendar now. You got plenty of time to arrange things. Friday, October 27th, 2023, at the Michigan History Museum, 702 Kalamazoo Street, Lansing, Michigan. You can go to the website, militaryvethalloofhonor.org, to get more information. But come out and be part of this history making. I think you'll find it truly educational. Bring the grandkids, bring the nieces and nephews, because you'll all find it of interest. So for Veterans Radio, we're always glad to highlight these sort of things, whatever state they're in. So give Dale or I an email shout-out. Go to veteransradio.org to reach us so that we can always keep developing new ideas for things you might want to hear on the radio. Remember, Radio on the River, go to the website or the Facebook to donate and help us out there as well. We really do appreciate it. Takes a few dollars to keep it all turning, and we appreciate our sponsors like NVBDC that and our VSO supporters in Ann Arbor as well. That includes the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Post Chapter 310, the VFW Post 423, and the American Legion Post 46, all who keep us energized and on the air, which we appreciate. And until next time on Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.